All right, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to talk today in almost entirely about work that is yet to be published, so it's work that's in progress. Papers are nearly finished, and in particular, this is work led by two people who unfortunately are not at the meeting. Mike McCourt, who's a graduate student at Berkeley, working with myself, Pratik and Ian, and Pratik Sharma, who's an Einstein Fellow at Berkeley. So what the three of us, Ian Parrish as well, who's here, what we've been thinking a lot about is related to the thermal stability of clusters. The title of my talk was The Thermal and Convective Stability of Clusters, and I'm not going to talk about convection at all. Ian's going to talk about that in the talk afterwards. So I'm really just going to focus on thermal stability. And I'll explain what I mean by that as I go along. So I'll just remind everybody what you saw yesterday. Clusters could cool, they don't. There's not enough star formation consistent with the cooling rates. There's not sufficiently large reservoirs of cold gas to be consistent with the cooling rates if all of the gas that could cool did cool. So in some average sense, there's heating balancing cooling. But as Megan emphasized in her talk, really, what I'm going to tell you is the theoretical counterpoint to the observational work that she described today. There is evidence for cool dense gas in many clusters. There is H-alpha emission. This is the H-alpha filament seen in Perseus. This is one example. More statistically, there's ubiquitous evidence for cold, dense gas in cool core clusters. And this is the plot that Megan showed of the H-alpha emission as a function of the central entropy of the hot gas in the cluster. So clusters with shorter cooling times, lower central entropies, have prominent H-alpha emission. Those with lower central densities, longer cooling times, higher entropies, don't have significant H-alpha emission. And this transition point in the entropy of 30 keV centimeter squared turns out to also be a useful predictor for where the star formation activity in the central parts of clusters sets in these low entropy systems. The radio power of AGN at the centers of clusters is also correlated with the entropy, the presence of molecular gas, PAH features, et cetera. So although there aren't cooling flows in the sense of everything that could cool cools, there's clear evidence for cold, dense gas in significant amounts at the centers of clusters, star formation rates ranging from a tenth of a solar mass to 10 solar masses a year, not 1,000 solar masses a year, but still appreciable. And the question is, where does this come from? And I'm going to take a clue from the observations, the fact that all of these observational indicators are so closely tied to the thermal state of the hot gas itself strongly suggests to me that what we're seeing is this cold gas actually forming by cooling out of the hot phase. And that's really what I'm going to focus on today. So that's what I'm really referring to when I talk about the thermal stability. So we think that in an average sense, there's a source of heating that balances cooling in clusters, which is the reason why there aren't cooling flows. But this is only true in some average sense, averaged over sufficiently large spatial scales, averaged over sufficiently long time scales. At any local point in the plasma, that need not be the case. Heating doesn't balance cooling locally, which can lead to local thermal runaway at some given place. So although there's global thermal balance in clusters, there need not be local thermal balance in clusters. That sounds like a really trivial point, but this issue of local thermal instability has actually caused a lot of confusion in the literature. This has been discussed not only in the context of clusters, but in the context of forming high-velocity clouds in the Milky Way's halo. And there's been a lot of confusion over this issue of thermal instability in hot galaxy halos, whether it depends on the entropy profile of the background medium, et cetera. So this is actually somewhat subtle physics. So the point of view I'm going to take in this talk is that whatever heating mechanisms fundamentally operate in clusters to balance cooling in some average sense, Be that radio bubbles, jets, waves, turbulence, conduction, et cetera, that those in local regions are thermally unstable. And personally, I think this is very, very likely to be true. Even for turbulent heating, right, the energy injected by turbulence depends primarily on the density and the turbulent velocity on the outer scale. And that linear heating rate that goes linearly with density is thermally unstable. So this local thermal instability, Alex is going to argue the opposite view in two talks from now, but this is the view I'm going to take, is that clusters are in fact prone to local thermal instability. And I'm going to argue that this not only, in understanding this, not only can explain a lot of the observations of multiphase gas in clusters, but it also has important implications for understanding the feedback cycle that maintains global thermal balance in the first place. And although this talk is in the plasma scary session, I'm really not going to use the words magnetic fields, conduction, or plasma all that much. Mostly I'm just talking about gravity and cooling. That's the physics I'm going to focus on. So in some sense, this is the punchline. And I should mention, I'm going to show a lot of numerical experiments, right? We don't just have to do Gedanken experiments anymore. You can actually code it up and run it on a computer. And that's what these are. These are thought experiments, little toy numerical models. So both of these are simulations where, by hand, I artificially force heating to balance cooling in an average sense, OK? But it doesn't balance cooling everywhere locally, so you can get thermal instability. So these two simulations, they both run for about 10 cooling times. They're Cartesian to simplify and isolate the physics. I'll show you spherical global cluster simulations a little later. Gravity's pointing down. These are density colors, where blue is the low density gas, red is the high density gas. The only difference between these simulations is in the ratio of the cooling time to the free fall time. So I'm going to argue that the fundamental parameter that determines the evolution of thermal instability and the development of multiphase structure in a globally stable medium is this dimensionless number, the ratio of the cooling time to the free fall time. Not K naught, right? Sorry. Not K naught, which has, you know, weird units that always take me a while to figure out. But from a fundamental physics point of view, there has to be some dimensionless parameter that matters at the end of the day. And this is the one. This is the key dimensionless parameter. So what's going on here? You can see clearly that when the cooling time is short, you develop dense clumps by thermal instability, form out of the background hot gas. Then they sink under the action of buoyancy and fall down in the potential. When the cooling time is longer than the free fall time, that doesn't happen. Thermal instability, when the cooling time is long compared to the free fall time, does not lead to significant multiphase gas. Instead, it leads to small linear density perturbations, which have enough time to fall down before they grow by thermal instability, because the cooling time is long compared to the free fall time that characterizes the buoyancy. So to quantify this, you can kind of see it visually in the images. And notice there's some boiling going on, right? There's some motions. This is a combination of internal gravity waves, which are associated with the density fluctuations, and a little bit of convection driven by the heating that's maintaining global thermal equilibrium. Okay. So I can quantify this a little bit more by actually plotting the RMS density fluctuation. So what is the average change in density relative to the mean density at some place as a function of the ratio of the cooling time to the free fall time that I start out with. So you should think of these as each representing a different cluster with a different central density. That different central density corresponds to a different ratio of the cooling time to the free fall time. And depending on that value, the ratio of the cooling time to the free fall time, thermal instability generates very different density fluctuations in its nonlinear state. This is the saturated density perturbation after 10 cooling times. So you've had e to the 10 times to amplify all the density fluctuations. They've completely saturated. When the cooling time is short, you get very large density fluctuations, which represents the multi-phase structure that you see developing in the left-hand movie. When the cooling time is long, the density fluctuations saturate at a linear amplitude. So no multi-phase structure. I cannot form 10 to the 4 Kelvin gas out of 10 to the 7 Kelvin gas in this situation. Why? As the density fluctuations amplify by thermal instability, gravity pulls them down, and they move a distance of order the size of the system before the density fluctuations ever become nonlinear. And so analytically, you can actually derive/argue that the density fluctuations should saturate at a value which is about the ratio of the free fall time to the cooling time, which is a straight line, reasonably consistent. This is all the results of these numerical experiments that I mentioned. These represent a bunch of different numerical experiments, 2D, very, very high resolution, 3D, no difference really between 2D and 3D, isothermal background states, constant entropy background states, very, very similar results, that's red and blue. Heating that is locally independent of the density rho, constant per unit volume. Heating that is locally proportional to the mass density, that kind of brackets some of our ignorance about the exact heating physics. And at the level that we understand this problem, I would say the results are indistinguishable. So it's a very robust result for the saturation of thermal instability in a globally stable medium. Okay? A corollary of small density fluctuations for long cooling times, large density fluctuations for short cooling times, is that the net rate at which material actually cools, right, and accretes to smaller radii, the mass flux. So this represents the mass flux to small radii, or equivalently, or almost equivalently, this is the net rate at which material is cooling out of the hot phase into the cooler phase. Okay? Yikes. Okay? This shows m dot normalized to the cooling flow value. What would you have if there is no heating for different values of T cool over T free fall? When the cooling time is short, m dot equals the cooling flow value. Heating doesn't do you any good in the limit of rapid cooling because thermal instability creates all these density inhomogeneities which sink. So you get the same mass flux anyway. Only if the cooling time is relatively long, okay, is the mass flux strongly suppressed relative to the cooling flow value. And analytically, the suppression should go like the square of this dimensionless number, and that's at least in the ballpark of what you see in these numerical experiments. It might seem like this is a very toy model, average heating equals average cooling. I basically argued that on observational grounds. One of the nice things is if you take that model and you introduce 100% fluctuations from point to point spatially with a white noise power spectrum with a wide range of different temporal correlations, you get a very similar answer. Only if the fluctuations about that thermal equilibrium reach the 300% level, then are the fluctuations so large that there really isn't even a well-defined global thermal equilibrium, and you get a cooling flow. So this argues that this toy model isn't as artificial as it seems. It's robust to large fluctuations about the assumed thermal equilibrium. The number I really want you to remember isn't a few, it's 10. Okay? In spherical geometry, if you ask, what is the critical value of T cool over T free fall for the development of multi-phase structure by thermal instability, It's not a few like it was in Cartesian geometry, it's closer to 10. And the reason is simply that there's another physical process that amplifies the density, which is compression as you move in the spherical potential. So it's easier to get multi-phase structure in a spherical system because the density fluctuations are amplified by compression as you go in, just by the convergence of the gravity. So, in the spherical simulations, an example of which is shown here, what we find is that when the cooling time is less than about 10 times the freefall time, then you develop this multi-phase structure. When the cooling time is longer than 10 times the freefall time, you don't. For the spherical geometry, we've explored again a range of models. Heating equals cooling in an average sense, and more physically motivated models in which we calculate m dot at small radii and heat up the surrounding material at a rate set by m dot c squared with some spatial distribution. So this represents a more physically motivated feedback model, and we still get a similar dimensionless number. And conceptually, those of you who are coming at this from the galaxy formation side of things, you can think about this as being related to the distinction between hot and cold accretion in galaxy formation. The criterion for maintaining the virial shock is basically related to the ratio of the cooling time to the dynamical time at the virial shock. And what we're doing is extending that similar conceptual idea to multi-dimensions with thermal instability and to all radii in the clusters, not just the virial shock. Okay. Plasmas, okay, are not hydrodynamic. They have magnetic fields. They have conduction. Those are all quantitatively extremely important in clusters. What that does is it takes blobs and it makes them filaments. Okay, so this shows a series of simulations where the cooling and the freefall time are the same, and all we've done is increase the value of the conductivity. And as the conductivity gets larger, you redistribute heat along magnetic field lines. In this case, the field was initially horizontal. So that creates not thermally unstable blobs that sink, but rather thermally unstable filaments that sink, provided, again, they really only start to sink and get significant multi-phase structure when the cooling time is longer than 10 times the freefall time. So I want to try to compare this a little bit to observations and then speculate about the broader implications of this result. So the condition for multi-phase structure at any point in a cluster then is really that the cooling time has to be less than about 10 times the freefall time, where that number, you know, depends on some of the details of the heating, but it's roughly this. And similarly, it's only if the cooling time is longer than a few times the freefall time that the mass flux, the cooling, and the rate at which material is accreting is actually suppressed significantly relative to the cooling flow value. You can express this in terms of X-ray observables, density, temperature, entropy, etc. This is one way of doing so. So for an entropy of 30 keV centimeters squared, the ratio of the cooling time to the freefall time is about 5 for typical cluster numbers, maybe 3 to 10, depending on the freefall time and the temperature. And so that means 30 keV per centimeter squared is right about this transition point where you start to get multi-phase structure. Conveniently, that's consistent with the observational results of Cavagnello, Megan, Mark, etc., people who've been working on this, that quantitatively, the clusters that show evidence for multi-phase structure, star formation, H-alpha emission, molecular gas, okay, are the ones with entropies below 30 keV centimeter squared. They're the ones with short cooling times, but short compared to what? Okay, short compared to 5 or 10 times the freefall time is the right way to think about it. And so I think this provides a plausible theoretical explanation for the observational results on multi-phase structure in clusters. Quantitatively, thermal conduction is also extremely important. At these entropies, the field length is hundreds of kpc. This is the length scale below which conduction stabilizes thermal instability. So conduction is very important for shaping what we see, but I think cooling in gravity may well be the driving influence behind explaining these kinds of observational correlations. Is it cooling time, or is it the ratio of the cooling time to the free fall time? So we tried to distinguish between those by taking data from the literature that are in the ACCEPT cluster and a recent H-alpha survey. So the red lines are clusters that don't show extended H-alpha emission, where there's still information about the thermal properties of the hot gas in the ACCEPT cluster, and the blue lines do show spatially extended H-alpha emission. And what you can see is that, first of all, they all reach kind of a minimum in T cool over T free fall at maybe 10 or 20 kpc, which is actually comparable to the spatial scale of the filaments. The ones with extended H-alpha emission maybe have slightly smaller values of the cooling time to the free fall time than those without extended H-alpha emission. But it's pretty hard, and the reason it's hard is that all of these clusters are roughly the same mass, they have a similar free fall time. So distinguishing between cooling time and cooling time over free fall time is pretty non-trivial. This is the best that we could do with data in the literature, but I think this is something that's interesting to look at. Okay. So I want to end by saying what this, I think, means for maintaining global thermal equilibrium in clusters, not local thermal equilibrium. So this is now m dot, the mass inflow rate at a kpc in global spherical cluster simulations with this feedback heating, okay, where, and we start with different initial central entropies. So if the central entropy is too low, the thermal instability develops rapidly, develops all this multiphase structure, stuff sinks down, generating huge m dots. So you don't actually suppress m dot relative to the cooling flow value very much. As the central entropy of the cluster goes down, the m dot going to small radii drops very rapidly, as I already showed you in the context of the Cartesian toy models. So for central entropies of 30 kV centimeter squared, which is a model that absent heating would still have a pronounced cooling flow, actually m dot is less than a solar mass per year for 5 gigayears. Okay, and this is again because of how local thermal instability saturates in this gravitationally stratified medium. So what this strongly suggests is that if there is a heating mechanism that cares about this m dot, okay, then, and I'm being agnostic, I don't care if it's AGN, supernovae, whatever, it's probably AGN, but whatever it is, if there's a heating mechanism that cares about the m dot to small radii, then you have a beautiful feedback loop. Because the mass flux rate is a very strong function of the central entropy, or equivalently, of the ratio of the cooling time to the free fall time. This physics, notice, has nothing to do with Bondi accretion. This physics is intrinsically multidimensional. You would not see this in a one-dimensional calculation because it has to do with how thermal instability saturates in multi-dimensions. And this provides the strong dependence of m dot on the cooling time to the free fall time, even when you're giving the cluster global thermal equilibrium, there still is this very strong dependence of m dot on the ratio of the cooling time to the free fall time, or roughly equivalently, k naught. And so this provides a feedback loop that can plausibly regulate clusters to have roughly these values. And this is exactly what we see in our simulations. So here's an example where we start with a cluster model that has a central entropy of 10. Okay, that's t equals 0. After about 1 gigayear, the average profile is the red line. It's unstable. all these filaments develop, sink in, develops all this heating. That heats it up, actually, to essential entropy of 30 or 40 or so, and then it cools back down. And so it regulates the cluster at around this value, and the amplitude of these excursions depends on the details of the heating, but this regulation at about T cool over T free fall of order 10 or so, namely the minimum value is order 10 or so, this I think is very generic given the strong dependence of the mass flux rate on the cooling time, or more importantly, the ratio of the cooling time to the free fall time. And so if we think about the population of clusters in central cooling time, where this is number of clusters as a function of central cooling time, looks bimodal, not critical that it's actually bimodal for the argument I'm going to give. Right, there is short cooling time, long cooling time. The short cooling time ones seem to pile up at a number which is of order 5 or so times the free fall time in the central part of the cluster. And so I think there's a plausible theoretical explanation for this in the context of understanding how local thermal instability develops in clusters and how global thermal equilibrium depends on the M dot created by that local thermal instability. So I'll just end there and say, again, reinforce the point that the development of multiphase structure in clusters depends critically on this dimensionless number, the ratio of the cooling time to the free fall time. This is consistent with the observational phenomenology that connects cool core clusters to H alpha emission, star formation, radio AGN activity, maybe CO emission, et cetera. And then lastly, the fact that the actual inflow rate, the cooling rate and the inflow rate, is only strongly suppressed compared to the cooling flow rate if the ratio of the cooling time to the free fall time is, you know, a few to 10, provides a nice feedback loop that can explain why clusters seem to regulate around this value. So, thanks.
Questions?
So can you show that this number T cool over the free fall time, is that the dimensionless number that generally applies independent of the functional forms of the heating
right.
and the cooling rate?
So the So we looked at this a bit. The relevant quantity, and I didn't want to go into it, is actually if you say, make a plot where you compare models that have heating proportional to rho to the 0 and rho to the 1, okay, they have thermal instability growth times which differ by a factor of 3, and the relevant number that makes the numerical results be the same is not the ratio of the cooling time to the free fall time, but the ratio of the growth, the linear growth of the thermal instability to the free fall time. So we've explored several different heating models. We haven't explored all possible heating models. For the ones that we've explored, the results are very similar when you compare the same value of linear thermal instability growth time divided by free fall.
Elliot, it's Andy here. It's an interesting scheme you've got, but I think
It's the physics, but go on.
I think observations of nearby clusters where we have a spatial resolution to test whether thermal instability is occurring at 10 kiloparsecs or so would rule this scheme out. And secondly, with the reflection grating spectrometer on XMM, we do not see the gas cooling below 5 million degrees.
I don't think you can rule out, can you rule out a part in 100 or a part in 1,000? Of the gas cooling? That's what this says, right?
No, but we know what the mass of the filament system is, so we know the rate at which cooling has to take place to form such systems. In Perseus, it's 100 solar masses per year.
So, again, I'll just emphasize, so okay. I completely agree that the comparison to the data needs to be done in more detail.
Well, it's obvious.
So is the physics. Okay, this is the physics. It's obvious.
Okay, we're going to save this for discussion. One last question while Ian sets up.
Hi. Megan actually talked about a paper she put on the archive last week, and they see pHs in the interglacial medium, which are very vulnerable to destruction on a timescale of about 100 years. So, if I understand you correctly, you want to condense out this cold structure out of the ICM. How do you make the dust and pHs in these filaments?
So, right. These calculations, of course, say absolutely nothing about this question. And I don't have a particularly good answer to that question. I don't understand. I haven't thought all that deeply about the physics of what happens when we go below 10 to 4K, start to form the molecular gas. Can you keep the very, very dense gas shielded from the hot phase when it's not cooled, et cetera? I don't have a great answer to that. But I think that's a problem just given the observations. I don't think that has anything to do with this particular bit of physics for how it may or may not form dense gas. That's a generic problem, and it's a very interesting problem.
Thank you, Elliot. We now have